Recruiters calling or texting you nonstop? Want to find the right job without exposing your personal info? Need tools to manage your search all for free? In every industry, there comes a moment when innovation challenges the status quo, ushering in a new era of possibilities. Beginly gets it. They get us. Their platform anonymously matches you with jobs that suit you until you decide to share your info. Customize your job search based on economic factors like salary or cost of living, or non-economic factors like location or nearby stadiums or airports. And their algorithm does the rest, all for free. Ready to find your perfect job? Visit beginlyhealth.com/doctoring. Powered by preference, connected by passion. This is part two of two. Hey, this is Brad Block, host of The Physician's Guide to Doctoring. This is a personal and professional development podcast for physicians where we have experts on the show that try to teach us everything we should have been learning while we were memorizing Krebs cycle.
So you mentioned your wife. Whenever my wife and I, we've been married for 46 years. We go for a walk every day and we listen to podcasts like this, like yours. And when I listen to a podcast, I'm saying, you know, what information is being given out? What's the data behind it? What's the logic behind it? That's how I listen to these things. But my wife listens entirely different. So she would listen to your podcast and the questions that she would have is he married? How does he treat his wife? Does he have children? Those are her main questions. So if Pamela's going to listen to this, let me ask you. So you've mentioned your wife. How did you meet your wife? Well, let me ask you this. How do you treat your wife?
Well, and actually that's been, you know, that's something I've done. We had a podcast episode on physician spouse, on like ways that we can make sure we are treating them well, right? Yeah. So what are the ways that we don't tend to not treat them well? And how can we do that better? So I think I treat her well, and she tells me that I treat her well. I think we have a really good relationship because we shore up each other's weaknesses really well. And we also recognize our own weaknesses. And so, you know, that humility helps. Also, she's a much better communicator than me. So she's always like, Brad, we need to talk about this. And she doesn't approach it like, Brad, we need to talk, because that never goes well, like starting a conversation that way. So, you know, so she's good at that. She's the glue that keeps the family together.
That's a good, well, wait a minute. Let's go back there. How does she? Because I've had difficult conversations, and that's kind of how I start them. How does your wife start a difficult conversation?
We wait until everything's cooled off.
Yeah.
We've never had like a blowout argument. Yeah. Never happened.
Yeah.
I'll just, you know, grumble and get quiet and then stew, which is unhealthy.
Right.
I recognize that.
Yeah.
And then once everything's kind of settled down, there's always touch involved. Like she'll put her hand on mine, something like that. So there's, which is important. And then she'll say, you know, can we talk about X? You know, she asked for permission. Like, are you ready to discuss this? Uh-huh. And so that gives me permission to kind of talk about it in a way that I'm comfortable with.
Right. And I love.
So it makes it sound like she's navigating my idiosyncrasies. And I guess it's kind of the case.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's something in there, though, Brad, it's the power of touch. Before anything is said, it's the touch. It's the power of touch. And I know, and I'm not good at the touching part either. I'm not a hugger. I'm not that kind of thing. But my wife is, and just
really?
The touch. Yeah. And just
that so surprises me, because you do seem like a hugger.
No, not a hugger. What the problem is, though, is that I meet so many huggers in life, especially in California, that if you don't hug them back, you know, you got to hug them back. And I get this phony, you know, pseudo hug, and I'll hug, and then I'll pat their back like, let's get this over with, you know.
My wife is Swiss, and in Switzerland, they kiss three times, So you go to a family event, and you'll spend the first half hour kissing
people.
It is so many kisses.
Oh, no, man. I would. They wouldn't let me in the country, I tell you. Yeah. Yeah. How'd you meet your wife, by the way?
The old-fashioned way. Match.com.
Matched. Gosh.
We never would have crossed paths
really?
If it wasn't for that. Never. We didn't go. She was living on the west side of Manhattan.
Yeah.
I was living on the east side, which if you ever lived in Manhattan, it's like living in a completely different country.
Exactly.
You know, you don't go cross town. You go north-south.
Yeah.
You do not go cross town.
Exactly.
So I messaged her. I was apparently her fourth online date ever.
Yeah.
And I think she was my 150th, something like that. Like I had, it was like I had taken it up like a full-time job. It was ridiculous.
Wow. And did something click the first date? I mean, where did you go your first date?
We went to a Belgian restaurant on the Upper West Side.
Yeah.
And I was a couple minutes late because I was driving from Long Island to the Upper West Side. So, you know, I hadn't anticipated all that traffic, but thankfully she was forgiving. And it just supposed to be for a drink.
Yeah.
But a drink turned to dinner.
Yeah.
And yeah, and we hit it off. And then after a couple of dates, you know, because I was such an avid online dater, I was still dating other girls.
Uh-huh.
And I would go out with her, and then maybe a few days later, I'd go out with someone else, and then back to her. And then, and every time I would go out with someone else, I would think, why am I wasting my time with this person when I'm clearly like head over heels for this other, like, what am I wasting my energy? Like, I'm clearly not happy right now sitting across from this person exchanging whatever.
Yeah.
And I'd much rather be with her. So it became very apparent then that like she was the one, because it was, you know, after 150 online dates.
Wow.
I mean, I don't know if it was actually that number, but it was a lot.
Yeah.
You know, it was scientific. You know, that's how I determined that she was the one.
Yeah.
Clearly, with an N of three, how did she possibly know that I was the one? Me with my N of 150, it's much more convincing data.
So on your part, I mean, there was something that just clicked right away on that first day.
Yeah.
What about her? Did she have that instant kind of saying, man, I'm not going to number five or six?
No.
Oh.
It was, so she's 6'1" and I'm 5'10".
I see. Okay.
So she never thought she'd end up with someone that wasn't as tall as her.
Yeah.
And so that was a barrier for her to get past. And so it was a little pill for her to swallow.
Wow.
So she wasn't as jazzed about date two and date three, but she still went on them. And I, well, you know, she warmed up and I wore her down with my clear social anxiety charms and all that.
Yeah, I could see you had some work to do.
Yeah,
you never got to 6'1", did you? No.
No. I never put the little inserts in my shoes to make myself a little taller.
But did you advertise yourself on Match.com as 6'2 or 6'1 or like?
No, I was honest about it. I said 5'10". I know guys out there that add an inch or two just to increase their, you know, Venn diagram of who would respond to them. But no, I was honest about it.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this, because this is fascinating to me. So if you've had 150 Match.com dates, what lessons in communication did you learn from those encounters?
So,
because I know this was communication is a big thing with you and you talk about it a lot. So what lessons did you learn?
This was pre-podcast. And so I wasn't as interested, receptive to it being a learning process as I am now.
Yeah.
So I wasn't in a mind space and mindset to learn lessons. I just learned what I didn't like about people.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it became a learning process in dating. And what I realized is like, you can't glean very much from someone online.
Yeah.
And so I quickly went from interaction online to date because like these online interactions would be like endless until you finally determined if it was appropriate to go out on a date.
Yeah.
Like I would try to go to date quickly, realizing that, you know, there were so many times where it'd be back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And then you get to the date and you're like, wow, this is not the person I thought they were going to be. And then all that time was wasted. So I would, you know, convert from interaction to date quickly, but that was learning how to date efficiently. That wasn't learning how to communicate better.
Well, you know, you always ask your guests, you know, things like, well, what was, let's say someone is talking about financial planning. You say, what was the worst mistake you made? Or someone's on communication. What was a real faux pas that you made? So I'm not going to ask you what the worst computer dating experience you had, but can you share with us one of those awkward moments in computer and again, in dating?
So this was online. This was, I'm sorry, like texting. This was pretty early on in texting. And the way that my cell phone worked, I didn't realize that when you sent a message, a text message, there would be multiple, like everyone could see all the recipients.
Okay.
And so I sent a text message to a couple of different girls that I had been on dates with in a group text.
Oh my God.
Thinking that I was just saying, like, hey, how are you? Or whatever it was that I said.
Yeah.
And
had a great time last night.
No.
Didn't go over well, I can imagine.
So that was a group text that I didn't realize was a group text. I thought they were each sent as individual. Because again, this was early on in texting.
Yeah.
So that was not good. Yeah. Faux pas.
Right. Well, you know, speaking of, you know, lessons of communication, in your podcast, I know you mentioned that after college, you didn't actually get into medical school. You were a personal trainer and you were a bartender.
Wow, you are digging deep in the Bradley B. Block history.
I am, because there's lesson. I'm doing that because I know there's a lesson there. So think about those jobs, personal trainer, bartender. Thinking back on it, I mean, I know at the time you weren't interested in communication lessons, but when you think back to that time, are there lessons that you learned from those jobs?
So I think, bartending, I was, getting a bartending job in Manhattan. This was complete nepotism. This was my dad was the accountant for the guy who owned the hotel. And so the hotel was being converted from one to another. So they were like, they still had the bar open, but this was not a busy bar. I was just, and actually at the time, Sex and the City was really popular. So everyone ordered a Cosmopolitan because apparently that's what they drink on Sex and the City. But I think, I didn't learn much from the bartending job, but I think from the personal trainer job, I learned that I'm not good at counting.
And doing
because
not good
you
at
have, counting.
Counting.
You have to count their repetitions.
Okay.
Like 7, 8, 9, 10, good.
Yeah.
And I would just lose track. But okay. So that's just a funny aside. But what I learned about communicating, what I learned was there would be the goals that, and this definitely translates into doctoring as well, there would be the goals that I think the client had for their own fitness and how they should go about doing it most efficiently and effectively. And then there was their own ideas about how to go about doing that. And so, you're in a customer service industry, you can't just impose your methods and ideas on them. You have to leverage their own interests and ideas and goals and mostly do get there the way that they want to get there and kind of help them navigate a little bit rather than use your styles and techniques and methods and put a little bit of their influence on it. It needs to be mostly their doing because they're going to lose interest. They're not going to enjoy it if you're not doing it the way that they want to do it. Now, if you have a way that you can find for them to do it that's more fun than they expected, fine. That's, I think, the exception. But what are the things that you already like to do? Okay, let's start with that. Do that better. Do that more. Do that, in a more intense way rather than, here, listen, you need to start doing Olympic lifting and deadlifting because, that's really what's going to get your muscle tone up and your heart rate up. Like that's not for everybody. So, meeting them where they are.
Brett, I love that. That is such a fantastic analogy. I mean, again, it's customer-centered care when you're a personal trainer. Customer, what's the perspective of the customer? And it's the same thing when you get into doctoring. It's what is the patient's perspective? What are their goals, right? Because their goal, and you've mentioned this, so their goal may not be to have an exact diagnosis of their runny nose. They just want to know that there's no cancer in the nose, right? Boy, what a beautiful analogy between personal training and doctoring. It's all about your customer. Yeah. And speaking of communication, with our patients, that's one of the things I really loved about your podcast is the advice you gave about communication. You gave two great pieces of wisdom about communication. The first one was, you know, giving patient perspective, just like we talked about. What are you worried about? You know, what's your biggest fear? And the person with the dizziness, I want to make sure it's not a brain tumor. So that is so great. What is your biggest fear? What's your biggest worry? What's your perspective? And the second thing that you said I thought was just so powerful is just making an empathic statement. Just making an empathic statement. And when you talked about dealing with challenging patients in that regard, and those were two great pearls two great pearls of wisdom that you gave to everybody. But let me take it a step further. What do you do? Let's say you have a patient, because this has troubled me too. So let's say you have a patient who thinks their dizziness is from a brain tumor. And you've examined them, you've done the MRI scan, you may have even sent them to a neurologist or something. Everything is fine. You've made your empathic statement. You know that they are worried about a brain tumor. It's not so much the dizziness. And yet they persist in that dizzy symptom. Doctor, I know you're telling me all this. You're telling me the MRI is negative. You're telling me the spec, everything like that. I got a brain tumor. You've got to find it. You've got to help me. What do you do next? Because a lot of times I'm stumped at that.
So is it that they're still having a symptom? Or is it that despite their workup, they're still convinced that they have something that's already been ruled out?
Both.
Yeah, I struggle with that myself. Yeah. I struggle with that myself. And I get advice on that from some of my guests, which is like, have planned follow-up, right? Like, listen, I understand there's nothing on your exam right now, but we can do, come back in 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Like giving them a plan.
Yeah.
And we'll see. Maybe there's more imaging that we can do. Maybe you can see another specialist you haven't seen yet.
Yeah.
And so like, you're not going to convince them otherwise. And then, you know, if you think that this is all being driven by some undiagnosed, unmanaged anxiety,
yeah,
you can start to steer them in that direction. Although I don't think like just listen, this is all in your head,
yeah,
right? Clearly you don't want to approach it that way, but like, listen, it's MRI. Do you think there might be that there might be some anxiety here?
Yeah.
You know, that's influencing some of this worry,
yeah,
you know, if it's not on the MRI.
Yeah. And sometimes,
you know, kind of.
Yeah. And I love that approach is like, listen, we're at an impasse here, but I'm still going to be here. You can come back to see me. It's not over with. I'm not kicking you out. I'll be here for you. And sometimes that's the best you can do and hope that eventually. So Brad, another thing.
But actually, I think that last thing that you said, and sometimes it's the best you can do. Sometimes it's all you can do.
Yeah.
Recognizing our limitations.
Yep.
Right? Like that's something that I've been become more comfortable as I've gone further into practice.
Right.
Is just recognizing that like there are some people that I'm just not going to be able to help.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know who to send you to.
Yep.
I don't know which specialist. I don't know which imaging study.
Yeah.
Like you might want to just get a second opinion from another general otolaryngologist who doesn't have any more specialty than me.
Yeah.
But just to get another pair of eyes on you. Like I think I'm at the limits of what I'm capable in doing to help you.
Leading a medical practice is challenging. There can be reimbursement changes, referral slowdowns, staff turnover, or drama. There are obstacles in the way of achieving your goals, or maybe it feels like you've hit a plateau. Who can you turn to for help with the business of managing a medical practice? The Physician Growth Accelerator, a private practice partner that helps you uncover and overcome constraints in your practice. They will check your business vitals, identify the root cause of what's restricting your growth, prescribe what to do about it, and help you achieve it, just like we do with our patients. Imagine your practice, where stress is reduced, profits increase in both patients and staff, and you are happier. They've been making that vision a reality for over a decade. Isn't it time your practice thrived? Discover how at physiciangrowthaccelerator.com.
I think part of the reason for our angst in these type situations is we put these enormous burdens on ourselves that I've got to have an answer for everybody. I've got to have a diagnosis for everybody. But just to tell ourselves, hey, we're human, we don't know everything. We don't know the approach to everything. And I just love taking the burden off ourselves. And, you know, I think that's just great advice. And, you know, what I learned to do is one of the things that I learned through our communication was just that very thing is just say to people, look, we're at an impasse. You know, you think it's this. I think it's this. I just don't know what else to do. We've done everything I know. I'll tell you what. Why don't you go home, talk to family, and think about it. If you come up with anything, any plan, any ideas, let me know. You know, but we're at an impasse, and then I put the ball in their court, and then it's up to them to come back, you know? So the other thing that I always, that I admire about you is, you know, you are a funny guy. You really are. Some of the comments you make, I mean, they're not like you burst out laughing, but, you know, I'm shaking my head and say, that's funny, you know? And you say the purpose, you know, I've heard you say again and again, and it's true. The purpose of humor is to comfort the afflicted, not to afflict the comfortable. And so let me ask you, how do you, in your daily practice, how do you use humor to comfort the afflicted? What sort of things will you say to people that will sort of ease them with using humor to sort of ease their worry?
I mean, you know, we've got these things that we say over and over, like I'll look in a kid's ears and then I won't like yell in their ear,
yeah.
But I'll say like, I'm going to test your hearing. So I'll look in like little Marcus's ears and be like, Marcus, can you hear me? And it's, you know, it's not like laugh out loud funny, but it's for a little kid. It's silly. He knows I'm, you know, he's going to be, so it helps, you know, break the ice and make the kids a little more comfortable. If a person's coming in for a sleep study, I'll tell them, well, so we do these sleep studies at home now. So what you're going to do is we're going to get it approved by insurance. We're going to send something to your house. You're going to put something on your wrist, a couple of fingers, maybe something around your chest. And then we're going to send someone to your house who's going to watch you sleep. completely deadpan. And because they've probably never met me before. They know they don't know that my delivery is often deadpan.
Yeah.
And so then I'm just kidding. We're not actually sending someone to your house. So, you know, I've got, you know, a couple, those are the two that come to mind.
Yeah.
Readily.
Yeah.
But yeah, I try. It's funny. We had a family dinner the other night and we have these things called table topics where we asked everyone around the table a question. And one of the questions was like, what traits do you get from your parents? Yeah. And I was the only one it was me, my parents, and my wife. So everyone at the table their parents weren't there to hear their answers except for me. So the pressure was on for me to say something that was flattering to them. And so I didn't get to the one, which is like what traits do I get from my dad, is I deflect from engaging emotionally by using humor. Uh-huh. That's what I get. And so like oftentimes I'll use humor. My wife, she'll get annoyed. She'll be like, could you just give me a straight answer to a question?
Yeah.
So I think I, in fact, should even tone it down with the jokes because I should just start giving people straight answers instead of trying to make everything into a joke.
Well, talk about a backhanded compliment for dad. Well, what did dad say to that?
No, he didn't hear it. He didn't hear it. No, it's being broadcast to the rest of the world, but he didn't hear it.
Oh, okay.
But no, he jokes. That's where I get my sense of humor from. He jokes. He jokes a lot and he jokes and he would agree too often.
I see. So speaking of broadcasts, now, like I said, in your podcast, I always like it when you ask people, you know, what was the worst? What was the worst? So I'm not going to ask you what was the worst, but in thinking of your podcast, can you think of some of the more awkward moments that happen as you as a podcaster or for your guests?
I mean, equipment failure is always going to be awkward. Yeah. And, you know, that sometimes happens where it's recording or not recording. Yeah. And, you know, you think it's recording, but and then you got to start over again. I mean, I had a guest who the introduction took a really long time and I had to just stop the episode because I try to keep the episodes to like 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And if the first 10 minutes are spent just in the introduction and not even getting to the meat of the interview, then there's going to be a ton of attrition. Nobody's going to listen to the episodes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I had to say, well, actually, we need to stop and we need to start all over again because we need to just keep that brief. Otherwise, we're going to lose our listeners.
Right.
I've had a couple of guests that started getting into like kind of the pseudoscience realm, you know, where it's stuff that I don't really espouse. And so I've had to be like, actually, we're getting a little further afield than, you know, I'd, like one that was, we were talking about cooking and they started talking about like, you know, shopping at a farmer's market. My experience, farmer's markets are super expensive. And so like, yes, doing farm to table is good for the environment and might be better for your health. But like, you know, if we're trying to navigate costs, like,
yeah,
I'm going to kind of deflect away from that. You know, there are people that are all about organic and organic is better. And I think organic is a buzzword and it's that food is not any more nutritious. And so, you know, navigating away from that stuff without insulting the guest, undermining the guest, and kind of like just kind of nudging them in a different direction. That's been, that's happened a couple of times actually.
Yeah. It's a fine line. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you, after these podcasts, do you ever, you know, ruminate about them or think about them? And let's say when you're driving to work the next day or whatever, thinking, oh man, why didn't I ask that question? Or maybe I shouldn't have let him talk too long. God, I really wish I had a do-over. I mean, do you sort of rehash these things in your mind?
Not for that long. Okay. Not for that long. I don't tend to ruminate on them for that long. It's more like, I should have interrupted a few more times. Or man, I feel bad because I interrupted too many times.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of times I will listen to the interview later and I will realize that I was beating myself up needlessly. Mm-hmm. So okay. I think it's important to try to improve, mm-hmm. to go back. What could I do better? But it's funny because in the rest of my life, I constantly ruminate. I ruminated over stuff that I said in junior high school that I still remember. You know, like it's not like I am immune to rumination. It's just this particular thing doesn't tend to sink its teeth into my brain.
Man.
Unless I said something that I really regretted saying, you know, something like that. But, you know, again, because of the magic of editing and the wizard of an editor that I have, you know, we can always take the stuff out and still sound seamless.
Yeah. Brad, I think you just gave liberation to half your audience because I'm one of those people who in the fifth grade, I think back of those incidents in the fifth grade. I should have done this. I should have done that. And now I know I'm not the only one.
Yes.
Thank God Almighty. You've made my day.
It's really remarkable how that stuff, you know, especially that period in your life. I think actually probably high school and college more than anything else, really, you know. That stuff comes back to haunt me all the time.
Yeah. Well, you know, Fred Rogers, you know that movie they made of Fred Rogers, Won't You Be My Neighbor? You know, he had this great line in there. He says, you know, there's one thing you can never lose. There's one thing you can never lose. That's your childhood. Yep. You know, it's like Faulkner says, the past is never dead. It's never even past.
Yeah. Oh, ooh, ooh.
So
that cuts deep, yeah.
Yeah. So speaking about the podcast and so forth, on the other side of the coin, thinking back, what podcast, you know, besides the one you did with me, but what podcast are you most proud of? What was your shining moment in podcast history?
So I did two episodes with BJ Fogg that I was proud to get him as a guest. And he's, you know, one of the godfathers of habit.
Yeah.
He's a researcher out at Stanford.
Right.
And so that was one. Another was just serendipitously, like it from a Facebook group, Scott Dickers, the founder of The Onion, talking to him about being funny.
Yeah.
And
I remember
that. He's written three books on that, on how to be funny.
Yeah.
So getting him to talk about it, and which is where I got the, you know, humor is meant to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable.
Yeah.
So that's from him. And then, you know, I'm sure there are a bunch that I'm going to kick myself for not mentioning.
Yeah.
But another one is Blake Eastman, who talks about nonverbal communication.
Right. I remember.
So
that
was, and then another one I've got coming out that I'm excited for people to listen to. And actually they probably, because of time travel, they would have already listened to it by the time this one comes out. Is Nicholas Boothman, who wrote the book, How to Make People Like You in 90 Seconds.
Oh, wow.
So he's going to be on the show talking about how to make patients like you in 90 seconds. So,
oh, man, I want to listen to that one. I'm waiting for that one. Yeah.
So this is, you know, that's the stuff that it's all teachable. It's all learnable, like making sure your nonverbal cues are really what you want them to be, making your patients like you in 90 seconds, not, you know, an hour long visit. Like it just takes a little while to really hook them at the beginning, and then you can get down to business, you know, like giving people good advice on how to change their habits, right? Rather than, you know, the ketogenic or whatever the diet of the year happens to be. I feel like that's the epitome of the physician's guide to doctoring, is like those interviews there.
So I remember you told this powerful story when you were, I guess it was in medical school or maybe residency, I don't know, but I think medical school. So you had to choose an elective and you chose ophthalmology. And not because you liked ophthalmology. It's because you were afraid of ophthalmology. You thought eyeballs were squeamish. So you signed up for ophthalmology, but you didn't get the elective. So they put you into ENT elective, and I guess the rest is history. I really love the fact that you went out and didn't do what was comfortable. You went out to conquer your fears. Let me ask you this, Brad. For Bradley Block, what fears do you want to conquer down the road?
I'm deflecting from like emotion by using humor, but they're terrifying because like sharks, fine. If you get out of the ocean, you're safe. Yeah. Bears, they swim, they climb, they run. There is nowhere you can go to escape a bear. And in fact, that the area that we live, that not that we live, but where we bought this investment property, there are a lot of bears. And I told my wife that I was up last night worrying that we were, because I mean, we were talking about something else that caused some anxiety. And then my brain, of course, segued that to bears. What happens if the kids get attacked by, you know, bear? What am I going to do? Yeah. So that's what kept me up awake last night. So yeah. So, but, and then she said, Brad, have you ever heard of like any, like that people live there year round and are not getting attacked by bears? So when we go up there every so often, the likelihood that one of us is going to get attacked by a bear is so infinitesimally small. And I was like, that's correct. You know, so the every single bear attack ends up in the news. Yeah. And so it makes it seem like it's, yeah, it's like more likely you get struck by lightning. So yeah, so bears actually are a legitimate fear of mine. And then what am I mean, I'm afraid, like, yeah, I mean, to really make my anxiety come out is I'm afraid that something's going to happen to one of my kids.
Yeah.
I'm afraid that something's going to happen to one of my kids or me or my wife so that we're not going to be able to be there for them.
Yeah.
Like that's the thing that keeps me up at night and the reason that I need to find a new therapist. And I think that I've been looking for a while, but I haven't been as diligent about it as I should just bite the bullet and contact someone. But that's, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's not like what thing do I want to conquer? So I'm like not afraid of, you know, nothing really comes to mind with that. It's just, it's actually, what do I want to conquer? I want to conquer my anxiety. Yeah. I want to, I'm not sure I'm exactly answering your question, but that's like, that's the thing I want to manage better because that'll allow me to be better everything, a better father, a better husband, a better physician, a better friend.
Right.
A better version of myself.
Right. And I hear you. And I think that's such an important thing. A lot of us suffer with that social anxiety. You know, it is something worth conquering or worth trying to get better at, trying to get better at. I hear you, Brad. I think that's, and thank you for, you know, having the courage to mention that publicly. And
that's a good segue actually into the interview that I'm going to do with you because social anxiety, you joined Toastmasters.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I can't wait to talk to you about it. And I don't know, maybe they have a match.com for a therapist too. I don't know if that 150,
that
I don't know.
That is a great business idea.
Yeah,
that is a great business
idea. I know.
Idea.
Maybe we could make something of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. Brad, anything else that you want to add that I didn't ask you or should have asked you or?
No, this has been great. It's weird for me to be on the, actually, it's not weird for me to be on the other side. Because I am on other people's podcasts as a guest, but to be on my own show as the guest was definitely different, but I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed all the questions, but I didn't do what every good podcast guest should do. And I didn't say, that's a great question, but all of your questions were great questions and really thought provoking. And I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. You know, one thing I want to say is when we were talking about this before we got on, you said something that really helped me do this interview. I asked you how you do your podcast, and you talked about, you know, I have a set of questions, but those are just guideposts. And if something comes up, I would just hit what comes to my mind, or if there's so forth. And I took that to heart when I was doing this, because I had a whole list of questions. I was going to go from one to the other, from the other. But I heard what you said, and I said, you know what? That is great advice. I'm just going to let it flow and let whatever comes to mind, whatever follow-up questions come to mind, we'll just go with that. So, Brad, I really enjoyed this interview. There's so many questions I wanted to ask you, and you didn't dodge most of them, and I really appreciate it.
Well, I'm flattered, and thank you for doing it. It really means a lot to me, Scott. Being contacted by recruiters can be a lot. I've been at the same job for over 12 years, and I still get texts and emails, sometimes in the middle of the night. Instead, get matched anonymously to find your right job. Beginly Health is a dating app for your career. To swipe right on your career, visit beginlyhealth.com/doctoring. Powered by preference, connected by passion. Thanks for listening. I have a favor to ask. You listened to the episode until the end, which means you either fell asleep or you really liked the episode. So please share it or like it or comment on a social media post or write us a 5-star review, something. It would really help me out. And maybe what you learned from this episode can help someone else too. The views expressed in this episode are those of the interviewer and interviewee and don't represent the views of their employer or even their significant other, even though the magic of podcasting make it sound like I'm talking directly to you. This is not a doctor-patient relationship, and this is not medical advice or financial advice or really any advice. Thank us again for listening to The Physician's Guide to Doctoring.